A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi everyone, this episode is sponsored by LEP Premium. I'm sponsoring myself again. I've just added a page on my website with loads of information about Luke's English Podcast Premium. So if you're wondering how reasonable the price is, what you get in episodes, how to get the PDFs, how many episodes there are now, and exactly how you can sign up, then go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info. And you'll find answers to some frequently asked questions about my premium content. And you can also sign up there if you like and then get access to all the premium episodes, which are all about helping you build your English with me. So that's LEP Premium, frequently asked questions, teacherluke.co.uk/premium info. Okay? Right, so shall I play the jingle now? No, actually, I'm going to play it later. First, let me tell you about this episode. So this episode, this is number 665. This features a chin wag, that's a conversation, by the way, with Sebastian Marx, a friend of mine who's originally from New York. He's an American, but who's been living in France for the last 15 years. Long-term listeners might remember him from his past appearances on this podcast. You'll see links to those episodes on the page for this episode. Okay, so Sebastian is a stand-up comedian who performs both in English and in French, and he was the one who first started doing stand-up in English in Paris. So all of us comedians who perform on stage here in English, including Amber and Paul and Sarah Donnelly and others, we all have Sebastian to thank for originally giving us that opportunity, as he's the one who got the whole scene started in the first place with the New York Comedy Night, which he set up years ago. I invited Seb onto the podcast in this episode just for a bit of a chat, but also to test his knowledge of British English slang. I'm always interested to see how much my American friends know about my version of English. So that's what we're going to do. In terms of the general chin wag, we talk for the first 25 minutes or so about a few topics, including what he thinks of the Trump presidency, his learning of French. That's Sebastian's learning of French, not Trump's learning of... I don't think Donald Trump is learning French. I'd be surprised if he was. I can't answer your questions about the coronavirus. I'm too busy conjugating verbs. So anyway, we talk about what Seb thinks of the Trump presidency, Seb's learning of French, and we talk about speaking French or English to French people, like, for example, waiters in cafes and the general stereotypes around how French people react in those situations. So there's a bit of a chin wag. And then after about 25 minutes of jibber jabber, we decide to focus on language, and you'll hear me testing Seb's knowledge of British English slang, informal spoken English phrases that most Brits know, but which Americans are probably unfamiliar with. So this is slang. So you should know that things get a bit rude later in the episode with some references to sexual acts, you know, like sexual stuff, and also a few other fairly lewd and crude things, like bodily functions and so on. Now, some of you are probably delighted to hear that, and you've got no problem with it at all, but I feel I should give you a heads up about rude content, just in case, I don't know, just in case you're a teacher listening to this in class or something. I'm just imagining sort of getting a message from a teacher who's used this episode, or perhaps even having a conversation with someone, you know, like this. Luke, I used an episode of your podcast in my young learners class the other day, and, oh, you started talking about arseholes and chests. It was quite awkward, and I'd have to say, oh dear, I'm terribly sorry, Mrs. Crawley. I should have provided a warning of some kind. I trust this will not affect my daughter's entry into the Royal Academy in September. Well, perhaps you should come for tea and we can discuss it at length. I have one or two things to say about you and your conduct and how this is affecting your reputation among the staff at Downton. Oh, I'm terribly sorry to put you out, Lady Crawley, etc. Sorry, I just kind of accidentally slipped into an episode of Downton Abbey there. Papa and Mama would be awfully disappointed. And we've just received a telegram that the First World War has started and we're all terribly worried about how this might affect life at Downton and blah, blah, blah. Just slipped into an episode of Downton Abbey there, accidentally. It doesn't normally happen to me. Anyway, I don't know, maybe you're a teacher or you're listening to this with children or maybe you just don't like rude things of that nature. Basically, there is some rude stuff in the second half of this episode. All right? No big deal, really. And you're all going, it's okay, Luke, we fucking love rude content. So don't worry. Okay, then, in that case. Okay, so anyway, I promised myself I wouldn't ramble too much at the start of this one. So let's crack on now. And here is the jingle, as promised. Now, here it is. Blah, 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 blah. Go. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Luke's English Podcast. You're listening to episode number 665 of the podcast. And today, I am, or this evening, I should say, because I'm recording this in the evening, again, during the lockdown or perhaps post-lockdown period. Anyway, in this episode, I am joined again for the, I think it's the one, two, three, four, five, sixth time on this podcast. It is my friend Sebastian Marks from...
Hello.
Hello, Sebastian.
Oh, sorry, I interrupted you.
That's right. No, I good that you did, because I would have just continued rambling and then an hour.
You did like a pause after Sebastian Marks, and I wasn't sure if that was my cue to say hello.
I think that is a good cue for you to just come in. Hello, Sebastian.
Hello.
Where are you? I'm fine. How are you?
Fine.
Good. It's sort of 10 past 10 in the evening. Mm-hmm. This is when I do my podcasting at this moment in time during the lockdown. Although technically France has kind of partially eased its lockdown. Is the lockdown over in France?
No, I don't think so. I think it depends on your region. If you're a green region or a red region, and Paris, like the whole Parisian area, is mostly red, apparently. And I happen to be in the countryside. I fled Paris 2 months ago, and I've been in the countryside ever since. And so my area is green. So it feels like it's kind of easing up where I am. So like I can go to the supermarket without a permission slip, because we needed permission slips for 2 months.
Yeah.
And now we don't. We can just go anywhere, and lots of shops are open. No restaurants or theaters, or, you know, I say theater, like movie theaters or anything. Nothing, none of that's open. But like I went to Decathlon, which is a sports store, 2 days ago.
Exciting.
Which was like, it was like, wow, we're going to a sports store. But we had to wear a mask, apparently. Mm-hmm. And but everything else is like, yeah, so it's pretty open now. I don't know how it is in Paris.
To be honest, it sounds exactly the same here.
Okay.
I mean, it's hard to get the Parisians to do anything. Certainly stay at home and not wander around in the streets, yeah, in the way that they like to do. So
Especially if the government says not to, they'll be like, who's the government to tell me what to do?
They love breaking the rules here. Although I have to say, during the lockdown, the proper lockdown, in my experience, the Parisians handled it very well. I mean, I expected there to be a lot more frustration. I thought that I would notice a lot more annoyed, frustrated Parisians, because they can be quite stressed out at the best of times, right?
Yeah.
So I was expecting lots of stressed out people, maybe confrontations in the street due to lack of social distancing. I thought there'd be people getting angry and upset with each other. I didn't see that really any more than normal. So anyway. So now, do you remember, well, first of all, do you remember the first time you were on this podcast? Do you remember what it was?
Oh dear, no. what it was, meaning like what we talked about.
Yeah, what was the top? What was the basic idea of the episode? I don't know if you remember that.
I don't remember. I know one time we talked about World War II, but I don't think that was the first time. I think that's when we were in Caen together.
Yeah.
I'm so happy to like pronounce this somewhat correctly. Caen. Caen. Because C-A-E-N in French is pronounced Caen.
Of course.
Yeah. Do you remember that?
I do, actually. Yeah. That was for the D-Day commemoration.
Yeah.
And you were performing, and also mm-hmm. Eddie Izzard was doing a number of shows as well. He did a show in English.
Three shows?
Yeah, it was 3 hours back-to-back, English, French, and German. Typically sort of crazy thing to do. And Yassine was there as well. Yassine Belous. That's how you pronounce his name. Because I've always said Yassine Bellhouse. But it's Belous, right?
Yeah.
He also was there, and he's mates with Eddie Izzard. And that's mm-hmm. when I actually got to meet Eddie. And I went to the show and ended up meeting him. And then he was like, hey, let's all go for dinner. And next thing you know, I'm sitting there at the table having dinner with Eddie Izzard. It was very strange.
Yeah.
And brilliant. Yeah. You've met him. He's been on your podcast, hasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. I did. I don't do that podcast anymore, but I did a podcast in French called Donc Voilà, where I would interview French comics and talk about stand-up comedy and the careers of the people I was interviewing. And I was lucky enough to interview Eddie Izzard, and we did it in French, which was quite frustrating for me.
Really?
Because I'm American, he's British. So it was just like, I want to speak English to you. And so like every question I would ask, he would take three times as long to answer because he was doing it in French and like insisted to do it in French. And like, it was very approximate, his French. And so it was, you know, I just wanted to get the answer when he was just like, ah, moi, je veux parler en français, qui est masculin. And like, he would just go off on tangents in French.
Yeah, he does that anyway in English, but I can imagine.
In English already. In French, it just takes three times longer.
Okay. Well, the first time you were on this podcast was in an episode called A Cup of Tea mm-hmm. with Sebastian Marx, and that was in 2014, episode 130.
Wow.
Here we are, over 500 episodes later. You're back again, but you've been on it several times before, several times since. I mean, mm-hmm. there was we planned a bank robbery. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With Amber and Paul, and also the episode about the D-Day commemoration, you featured in that one, and hold on, you did, that's it, I had a conversation with you and Sarah Donnelly about the Trump presidency. It was actually before the election, so it was in the mm-hmm. run-up to the election. We were talking about Trump versus Clinton, and that was it would have been just before the election. So we're talking
2016.
It was specifically in October 2016. We were mm-hmm. talking about what we thought might happen, what we thought of the candidates and stuff.
And we were probably like, oh, Trump could never win.
I don't remember, actually.
I bet that phrase came out of my mouth.
It's quite possible. There is a comment actually underneath that episode. It was written 6 months ago. Iwona. I don't know where Iwona's from. That may be a Polish name. Anyway, and she wrote this. I'd love to know what Sarah and Sebastian think about Trump's presidency now. Is it as bad as they expected? And she's written, I don't watch news, so I've no idea how Americans or the rest of the world judge him. Really? 6 months ago? She's got no idea? I even tried to Google it, but I realized I'm only interested in Sarah and Sebastian's opinions. And then she wrote, a while ago, I heard that he's actually less crazy as a president than people expected. So what do you think, Sebastian?
Well, I guess it's kind of like twofold in the sense that, yeah, I mean, like the world is still existing. So like when he became president, I was like, this could really go anywhere. And of course, the worst was like World War III breaking out or just total chaos. So those two first two scenarios didn't plan out, thankfully. Mm. But yeah, I think he's living up to like what I imagined him being as a president, especially just being so good at just being invincible. Like he just can say anything. and say one thing and then say the contrary the next day, and people will be like, but you just, and he's untouchable. It's incredible, I think, how he's managed to get to this point where he can say really offensive things or really stupid things, and it just becomes so normal, and it's just like, okay, this is how it is. And we've learned not to take him seriously, but we're all forced to take him seriously. It's like, I made a video about this. I mean, like, where I talk about my 2-year-old son and like how he's very capricious and you could say one thing and then say the opposite thing 2 minutes later, but you gotta work with that because you're his family and I'm his father. So I have to deal with it, So it's a similar situation where we have this weird guy in charge and like, we all have to deal with him because we voted for him. And so no matter what he says, just like gotta figure out how to interpret it. And so I don't know if it's worse or better, but yeah. It's
yeah, and worse or better than you expected, or just pretty much exactly as you expected. Yeah,
I think so, yeah.
What did he say recently about, he was sort of rambling on in one of his press conferences about a potential solution to the COVID-19 situation. And he started going on about how, what was it he said, that you could start injecting bleach?
Like, bleach pretty much into your body, and it will kill the virus immediately. Like, does he know that this will also kill the body?
Like, yeah, if you inject bleach is the stuff that you listeners, I don't know if you know, the stuff you put in the toilet, and if the toilet's dirty, you put bleach in it, it smells really bad. You've got to open the window because it's basically
and
poison.
And it's bad for you. Yeah, if you like breathe it in.
If you breathe it in, it's seriously poisonous, but it will clean the toilet completely. So it's a very, very powerful cleaner. But yeah, if you inject bleach into your body, yeah, it'll kill you. It'll kill the virus. It'll kill everything.
He wasn't wrong when he said that it would clean up, kill the virus immediately. He was right about that.
But I mean, really, it was absolutely extraordinary, an extraordinary thing for a president to say, someone who's in that position of power, to say, we're going to, inject bleach into the body. Trust me, folks, it'll kill the virus. It's very effective. And then he said also something about shining light into the body, and that the
ultraviolet light, apparently, if you shine that in the body, but he says like, don't shine it at the body. It has to be inside the body. Like, I don't know, through a tube or something. Like, he specified where the ultraviolet light is going to be shown.
Yeah.
Be shined or shown.
Shone.
Shone. and, but yeah, it's just, we have no idea if he's serious, if he's basing this on any sort of research, if any scientist told him this, or if he's just like read it on the internet once and just like, I'm going to talk about this on my, like, we have no idea.
And then the next day he was like, I was being sarcastic. It was just a joke. You guys have got a terrible sense of humor. And it's like, really? Were you really being sarcastic? Or are you just saying that now? It's impossible to tell.
Yeah, it's impossible.
Supposing we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or just very powerful light. And then I said, supposing you brought the light inside the body, which you can do either through the skin or in some other way. Right. And then I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning? Because you see it gets on the lungs and it does a tremendous number of the lungs. So it'd be interesting to check that. So that you're going to have to use medical doctors with, but it sounds interesting to me.
Can you clarify your comments about injections of disinfectant?
No, I was asking a question sarcastically to reporters like you, just to see what would happen. But I was asking a sarcastic and a very sarcastic question to the reporters in the room about disinfectant on the inside. But it does kill it, and it would kill it on the hands, and that would make things much better. That was done in the form of a sarcastic question to the reporters.
And so that's where his genius, there's a genius in all of this, because we're on such like unsure footing all the time. Like we have no idea what to take seriously, what not to take seriously, where the truth is. And so we're constantly caught off guard. We have no idea what he's going to do next. And I think that's to his advantage. You know, he likes us there. So he can just get away with whatever.
Yeah, it gives him a certain level of control that we're like constantly like, but and yeah. Then he's like, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. And then he leaves and we're all go, but, and then it takes everyone 24 hours to work out what's happened. And then they ask him fresh questions and he goes, that's a terrible question. You should be ashamed of yourself. And then it's a new thing and everyone's like, but, and everyone's just constantly like that all the time.
Fake news.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. And so as an American person living in France, you've been here for 10 years?
15
years. As an American person living in France, do you feel like your identity has changed or do you feel more or less proud? How do you feel about being American living in France now? Do you feel embarrassed about it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if embarrassed, but like, yeah, it kind of it confirms my decision, I'd say.
To leave.
But at the same time, yeah, so to leave France, I'm sorry, to leave the States to live in France. But at the same time, you know, most of my friends are still in the States, and so I talk to them. It's their daily lives haven't changed that much. You know, it's not from the outside, we focus on what Trump is saying and what we often focus on the worst things. You know, it's usually the worst things that make headlines. But, you know, I don't think fundamentally the United States has changed that much. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, I don't really think about it too much. And I don't think most French people know the American government and the American people are not the same thing. Well, any government, you know, any person in power and the people is not necessarily the same thing. Most people are intelligent enough to separate those.
Okay. Right. So first time you were on, we were just basically talking about, well, various things. Actually, there were questions that came in from my audience. I said, hey, I'm going to have an American on my podcast. Do you have any questions for him? And they asked you stuff like about what about the war in Afghanistan and things like that. But also we just established that you came here 15 years ago and you kind of like were the person who started doing stand-up comedy in English in Paris. And my listeners will know that, you know, that I'm involved in that scene. And they also are familiar with Paul and Amber because they're on the podcast quite regularly. And they know that Paul, you know, has established himself as a stand-up comedian here, doing shows in English and in French. But I mean, you're the person who kind of like sort of kicked off stand-up in English here. How have things changed then since, 2014, 6 years? What's been the kind of path that you've traveled down in the last 6 years then? Did you have kids 6 years ago?
I had one kid. Now I have three kids. So that's changed. I've multiplied myself. Has the scene changed? I think the comedy scene has changed a little bit, but not that much either. I mean, it's still a relatively small scene, the English comedy scene in France. It's still like we all know each other. And what has changed is like I've had pretty big names, like American comedians come over to France and I've had the chance to host them on the New York Comedy Night. Like we recently had Jerry Seinfeld on the show.
Yeah, that was amazing. Yeah,
that was incredible. And before that, we had Louis C.K. who came several times on the show. And just the fact that I've been doing it for so long, like people, comedians in the United States, when they come through Paris, they look me up and they get in touch with me. And so I've had the chance to have lots of these big names on the show. Well, I continue. I mean, I'm still at it. You know, I'm still hosting my comedy night in English. I also had a one-man show in English that I stopped doing last year. But I'm probably more known in France for my French career, for my French show and the sets I've done in French, which have been on like somewhat prestigious French festivals, like the Montreux festival that happened in Switzerland. And like I've had videos that I've done about the French language with Topito, which is like this Facebook website page. And so I'm more known in France for performing in French with my accent and than I am with like my English speaking career in France. Also partly because like most people in France, the majority of the people don't speak English well enough to kind of have a be able to have like a full career in English in France.
Yeah, you've got to be able to do it in French as well, haven't you?
Yeah, it really helps. Yeah.
You can't just do it in English because the English isn't quite strong enough here. Yeah. So you said that so you're more well known for your work in French with your accent.
Yeah.
So tell us about speaking French then to French people, either on stage or just in life. Your French is very good, though. I mean, you've done so well.
Thank you, Luke. You're saying that because you're British,
and because my French is far behind yours. But I mean, I do think you've done well. I mean, haven't you? I mean, I've seen your videos. I see you speaking French. You're fluent.
Yeah, I'm fluent. I'm definitely fluent. But like, I've hit a glass ceiling. I've definitely plateaued. Like I've gotten to this level. I feel like I made lots of progress in the first 5 years. And then it's just been the same level for the last 10 years. So like, I feel I'm still making mistakes. I'm still mixing up the masculine and feminine because every noun has the article depends on the gender of the noun. So I'm still making those mistakes. I'm still mixing up or constructing my sentences very strangely. So, you know, I'm still at this point where like I say three words and French people know I'm not French.
Oh, so that does happen to you.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Partly
because of the accent and also partly because like, oh, you said that a bit weirdly. And so it's clear that I'm not French.
What's the most common reaction you get when you open your mouth and they go, oh, you have a petit accent?
Well, it depends on the person. If the person speaks English, they'll respond in English, which is really annoying.
Wow, they still do that to you.
Yeah, I'll be like, bonjour, je voudrais ça. And they're like, do you want an English menu? It's like, no, I don't want a fucking English menu. I just, was it really that bad? Like, so I still get that sometimes or just the polite people would be like, ah, vous avez un petit accent. You have a little accent. Where are you from? You know, and they kind of downplay the accent by saying, oh, you have just a slight little accent.
But it's enough to stop you mid conversation.
Mid my first sentence out of my mouth.
But never mind what you're saying. Stop right there. You have a slight accent. Explain yourself.
You are not from here.
Yeah.
So that still happens, yeah.
The stereotype of the French is that they don't want to speak English. Do you agree with that?
That they don't want to, or they don't like.
Well, the thing is,
they know English, but they refuse. Or you mean like they?
Yeah. Well, the
just
thing
don't want to learn it.
What I mean is that, say, tourists, English speaking tourists, go to France and they attempt to speak English to the locals, you know, in the cafes or whatever, and they come away going, oh, the French are kind of a bit rude when it comes to speaking English. They refuse to speak English to you, or they, for whatever reason, they don't speak English to people. I mean, that is a loaded thing to say anyway, because it suggests that the French should be speaking English to tourists, which is another question. But basically, do you agree with the stereotype, which is that the French are reluctant, for whatever reason, to speak English to people?
I think that's true. I think it's truer than for other places in the world. I think that if you go to Madrid in Spain, if you go to Moscow, I think if you just come out and started to speak English, the locals would be less offended that you're coming out speaking English. I think the French get upset, especially when you don't make even a little effort. Like if you just come out and say, hi, I want a table for two, you know, like you're in another country, learn how to say like the basic five words, like hello, thank you, please, and I would like, you know. I guess probably they're thinking like make a little effort. So like if you come out and you say bonjour, I want that. The simple fact that you like started by saying bonjour, I think is you've already won several points.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they'll be a little bit more forgiving. And I also think the other big reason is because for centuries, French was the lingua franca, was like the language of culture and the international language for so long that when English took over, I think that was a shock for them. And I think they never really fully got over it. And I think that's still kind of a thorn in their side. You know what I mean? And I think like there is that aspect that's probably still hiding somewhere.
It's a funny thing though, for me, in my experience, I find that, so you're exactly right. Okay. You're exactly right. That the French need to be unlocked with the word bonjour or bonsoir. You've got to say those things first. And then, as you say, you gain points and then you can probably speak English a little bit if you don't have any other French, but you've got to, the password is bonjour or bonsoir. Those are passwords. Yeah. But in my experience, I go around, I try and speak French to people, and exactly what you said before, they respond to me in English. So I go and I order my food or drink, whatever it is, in French, and then they speak English to me. So that's the kind of another weird thing, which is that actually my experience on a daily basis is that they don't want to speak French to me either. They don't want to speak. It's like, you know, it's like a game of, it's like I start speaking French, you start speaking English. Okay. So, you know, or if I start speaking English, you're going to start speaking French to me. So it's like whichever language I choose to start with, you're going to change to the other one, because, you know, so it's a pretty weird thing. But I guess they're, you know, essentially French people these days, I find, are like often really interested in practicing their English, like any opportunity they get. And they see the value, especially younger French people really see the value of English these days.
I was about to say, like, the younger French people see the value and speak English better. I mean, you know, they've absorbed so many like sitcoms or movies in English that they've really become very good at it, or at least understanding English.
Spoken English, certainly. Yeah.
Better. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's definitely changed in the last like 20, 30 years.
Right. And so in a moment, what I'm going to do is test your knowledge of British English slang.
You mean the worst English, the worst version of English?
The worst version of English of all the Englishes, all the international Englishes.
of all the international. British English is definitely the worst.
British English slang. Yeah.
The least authentic.
Well, now have you one, we're talking about stereotypes of the French. Let's talk about stereotypes of the Americans. One of them is that Americans don't know about the rest of the world and not very familiar with maybe other types of English. So, for example, when I spent time in the States in the past, just on holiday and stuff, going into a shop and sort of speaking to people, they always thought that I was Australian or that my family were all Australian, because we weren't speaking like characters from Downton Abbey. I mean, I'm quite well spoken.
You could definitely be on that show. I mean, I think you have a very, very good British English.
I'm quite well spoken, but I don't know what it is. I'm not like, all right, mate, I'm from Britain, all right, how's it going? I'm not like Cockney or anything. But anyway, because we were a sort of family at the time, my brother and me were quite young, my parents were youngish. And we were dressed in casual. I don't know what I'm talking about, but anyway, they like, are you guys Australian? It's like, why?
It's because you look like Paul Hogan. That's why.
Yeah, g'day, guys. Anyway, what am I trying to say? So, as an American person living abroad now in France, in Europe, do you feel like you're more aware of the different other types of English? Are you more familiar with Australian English, British English, and stuff like that?
No, I don't think I've become more familiar with it. But I mean, like, really? I talk to more British people and more Australian people. Yeah, but like, I don't think I've learned more about, for example, British slang than I did before. Okay. Not necessarily, I don't think so.
Do you reckon you know some British slang? I'm going to test you in a moment. Do you reckon how do you reckon you're going to do in this little test?
I think I'm going to do fine. I think I'm going to do like, okay. I think there's going to be lots of words I've never heard of. There are going to be some words that I've probably heard of, but don't really know the exact definition of. But I'm excited. This is going to be fun.
Okay. I think, to be honest, you're going to be able to work a lot of them out from context. But I think what I'm going to do is I'll just give you the word or phrase without the context and see if you know it.
Okay.
And then I'll give you the context, see if you can work it out.
Okay.
So I'm actually using a list from a website, which you're not allowed to check, but I'm saying it anyway, just so my audience can check it out if they want to. It's called 50 British Phrases That Americans Just Don't Understand from a website called Matador Network.
I think I'm going to get 25 out of 50.
You reckon?
Like, I don't know. If exactly 50%.
We're not going to do all 50.
Okay.
I'm going to pick and choose. Okay. So first word, pants. Now, it's not what you think, but anyway, pants. Let's start with just the word pants.
Spelled P-A-N-T-S?
That's right.
Because you guys say trousers for pants.
Yeah, there's that, but that's not what I'm actually looking for. But yes, let's talk about that, though. Go on.
Okay, well, in America, what we call pants, you guys call trousers, and you're wrong. So that's just a difference. And it's funny because when I tell British people pants, they're like, "What do you don't mean pants, you mean trousers?"
Because for us, pants is your underpants.
And is that what it is?
Pants is underwear. My daughter,
so your pants is underwear. Okay,
exactly. So when you talk about, you know, your pants, we're like, they said pants.
I didn't know that.
Okay, well, there you go. I'm glad.
I knew the trousers. I just didn't know that pants actually meant underwear.
Yeah, so we have our trousers on, and then under our trousers, we wear pants. But in America, you wear pants. What do you wear under your pants?
Underwear.
Just underwear?
It's underwear.
Okay.
Underwear is the general term. And then if we're talking about, like, if it's a man, it would be boxer shorts or briefs or boxer briefs.
Okay. They're
kind of in between. Women would be panties, I guess. What would the British say?
If it fits for, like, women?
Specific.
Oh, this is a tricky one. Because I've been trying to work this out because, you know, my daughter is now moving away from wearing nappies or diapers, as you insist on calling them.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm trying to decide what to call the things that she's wearing. So in French, it's culotte.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm calling them pants.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Mm, okay.
British.
I'd say they're just pants. Okay. Next one. So anyway, the word pants, that's not what I'm looking for. So there's pants, the garments that we wear in America that, you know.
Oh, there's another
meaning of the word pants, and it's an adjective. Meaning, like, that's pants, or that was, it was pants.
I don't know.
So what did you think of the film?
Great.
That awesome. Film, what did you think of the film? Oh, I thought it was pants.
The way you're saying it doesn't sound awesome anymore. It sounds like really poor.
It's terrible. If something's pants, it means it's rubbish. It's no good.
Do you know where that comes from?
Maybe just the fact that pants are, I mean, depending on whose pants they are, pants are not great, I guess. They can be great. I mean, if they're a fresh pair, then better. But
nothing better.
Anyway, I don't really know where it comes from, but there it is. If something is pants, it means it's really not very good, right? So if you're watching a film, you're watching a stand-up show and it's terrible, you lean over to your friend and go, "This is pants."
This is pants. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. How about this one? I'm sure my audience will know this because I've done this before, but you should know this. Knackered.
Really tired.
Exactly. I'm absolutely
knackered. That's a great one because I don't think we have an equivalent in American English.
You don't have
to say we were to really tired.
Exhausted.
Yeah, but you have that also in British.
We do. Right? But you don't have a slang word for really tired.
I don't think we do.
Because it's...
I'm beat.
Yeah.
I'm dead.
I'm beat. Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah, yeah. You don't say that in British English, do you?
Certainly not.
And what do you say, like, "Oh, I'm dead"?
I'm dead.
I'm dead tired.
I'm absolutely dead. No, well, not normally. It would be "I'm dead tired."
Yeah.
Yeah. But
beat. I think beat is probably the most common American version of knackered.
I think so. Beat blood.
I really like. I like knackered. I think the Americans should use knackered more.
It's a nice one, isn't it? You know where that comes from?
Yeah. No.
The knacker's yard is where horses that were basically too old to be useful anymore, they were sent to the knackers. So if a horse was knackered, it would mean it's too old and tired to be of any use, and they send it off to the, it's a sad story. They send it off
it
to
is.
The yeah, they send it to the knacker's yard where the horse is put down, meaning killed,
mm-hmm.
and then you know the body parts are used for various purposes. That's in the
like
old,
glue.
Like glue and so on.
Mm-hmm.
They just turn the horse into glue. It's weird that, isn't it?
It is weird.
It's a bit random. Like glue. Glue. Like just what did you do? Just flip through a dictionary and pick a word at random. Yeah, we'll turn the horse into glue.
We turn sheep into band-aids. It's like, what?
Yeah, that's right. And we turn cows, they become like
scissors.
Seat belts. Okay. So knackered, meaning tired. We also, you know, we have the another slang expression, which is I'm absolutely cream crackered, mate.
Cream crackered
means knackered. It means knackered.
Yeah, really, really knackered.
It's slang on slang.
Yeah, I like cream crackered.
How about this one? Okay, I was absolutely gobsmacked.
Is that really drunk?
Surprisingly, no.
It sounds like it.
Good guess, because basically, if it's like an "I was a brr" word, you could guess that it's drunk, because we have a lot of words for drunk. But no, gobsmacked means I was surprised, shocked, like
lost. Gobsmacked.
Yeah.
Wow. No, I didn't know that.
Lost for words. So shocked and surprised, it was like imagine your gob is your face.
So okay. Really?
Yeah.
That's another one I didn't
Shut
know.
Your gob, mate. Shut your gob means shut up. Shut your mouth.
Yeah. And so you smack your face when you're
actually to be correct, gob is your mouth, not your face.
It's like the French equivalent of gueule.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What they would say, ferme ta gueule, like close your, it's like snout. It's actually technically snout. Like the mouth part of your face. It's not only just like your mouth, it's like the whole, like if you have a snout and
like a dog. Like the way a dog has
like
got
a, dog.
A snout.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In Northern Ireland, I don't know if it's in everywhere in Northern Ireland, but certainly the Northern Irish friends that I've got, they'd say beak. Like the way a bird has got a beak. You know,
yeah.
But the way
shut your beak.
Yeah, but they're so wonderful the way they pronounce that with that strong Belfast accent. If it's shut your beak, beak, like that.
Beak.
Shut your fucking beak, man. Look at the beak on. Look at the fucking beak on her. I shut your beak.
Shut your beak.
Yeah, meaning shut your mouth. Shut your beak. Yeah. Anyway, gobsmacked. I was absolutely gobsmacked. I couldn't believe it. Okay. Let's see. Let's see. What else have I got here? Oh, hold on a minute. I'm just going to go for a slash.
A slash. Urination. Going to urinate.
Yes.
I'm going to a pee.
Yes, exactly. Going to go and have a pee. Go to do a pee. Go and have a wee. I'm going for a slash.
A slash.
It's good, isn't it?
Where did that come from? Yeah, it's great.
Again, I'm not sure where that comes from, unfortunately. I could spend hours looking it up, but often I find those... Don't you often find that those stories of where did the word come from are often disappointing?
Yeah, and really far-fetched.
Yes. So,
well, knackered was great. Knackered was, like, for me, perfect. Like, it makes sense, and it's poetic, you know?
Right. But often they don't really satisfy. The story behind the word is often not that... satisfying.
Yeah, sometimes like it's not even true, like we're not sure, but it might come from this.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Where it's like, well, first it was used here and then it was used by Sir Daniel Smedig of
1643 in his
when it comes
work.
Comes from the Greek you know, whatever.
Lashos.
Exactly. Although the meaning has changed over the years and we don't really know why. I'm going out on the lash tonight.
On the town.
on the lash specifically. It's not just the town. I'm going out on the lash, like I've
like to go crazy, like to party.
It means to go and get drunk. Yeah, to party. Okay, yeah, to go out on the lash is to go out drinking.
On the lash.
Okay. On the lash. Again, the lash must be basically alcoholic drinks.
Yeah.
Okay. And how about this? Yeah, I'm going to go out on the lash tonight. Hopefully, I'm going to pull.
to score, meaning to get lucky.
Yes, exactly.
Or with somebody of the opposite sex.
Yes, or indeed the same sex.
Or same sex, if that's your liking.
Exactly, if that's your preference. To go out on the pull, or to be on the pull, means that you're out trying to get lucky. You're trying to get laid.
Yeah. Do you guys say get laid?
Yeah, we do say to get laid. Yeah.
So remind me, the pull, it's like you can say like, I pulled last night.
I pulled. Yeah. To pull someone or just to pull.
Yeah.
In French, it's to drag someone.
Yeah.
Which
that
I always
seems very like caveman-esque.
It seems a little bit like borderline. Like borderline sort of, you could be arrested if you drag. If you're dragging a girl, that either means that she's unwilling or she is unconscious.
Yeah.
In either case, it's a crime.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I say caveman. It's like, you know, those cartoons where the caveman just bonks the woman on the head and pulls her into his cave. It's like, I wonder if this is coming from the French, because draguer is not to score, it's to hit on somebody.
Oh, is it?
It's to, yeah, to try to seduce somebody.
To flirt, yeah, so, or to chat, to flirt, chat someone up.
Yeah.
Is drag in French. Okay, but anyway, pull is not
to pull.
Yeah, it's not just to try to score with someone, but to actually score.
Actually score,
yeah.
Okay. And can a girl say that about a boy, or is it mostly a man about a woman?
Yeah, girls can say it about boys. I mean, it might be considered a bit sort of unladylike to speak like that, but I mean, you know, yeah, certainly I wouldn't mind, like, if my female friends talked about pulling or going out on the pull. Yeah, girls can say that.
You can go out on the pull.
Go out on the pull, to be on the pull, to pull someone, or just to pull. Yeah, I went out on the lash last night, pulled.
See, if you said that sentence, I would have no idea what you were talking about.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So good. We're in the right zone then here. We're learning.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, did you pull that girl last night? Oh, I got off with her.
How would I say this? Like, to get along with.
Ah, no.
Like,
No, that's, we'd be like to hit it off with someone. Like, hey, we got on really well. Like, you know, we're really good friends already. Now, that's to get on with someone. But this is to get off with someone. And it means to kiss, not to go all the way, not to pull 100%, but to kiss passionately. French kiss.
Really? Get off with someone.
Mm.
Wow.
So definitely don't say that in America. They call it necking or something in America, right?
No. They say necking 70 years ago. No one says necking anymore. That's like really like not.
Maybe
50s, like 1962, they buried that word.
I think
like
I think I got that from A Catcher in the Rye, J.D. Salinger or something.
Yes, okay. You just proved my point.
Right. So what would you say then to get off?
Making out.
Right. Making out with someone. Yeah, you hear that in films and stuff all the time. Making out.
That's why it's cheating. Like, I feel everyone knows American slang because of our movies and songs and all that stuff where you can't really know British slang unless you're living there.
I know. We've got a lot of British TV shows and things.
But we don't watch that.
Get out of town.
We watch Fleabag and that's it.
And you watched, what's the one that's supposed to be set in Birmingham, although the accents sound more like Liverpool? Peaky Blinders.
Oh, yeah. It's a Brummy thing.
Saw like English.
Half an episode. But yeah, they probably have like tons of slang. in that that I probably didn't even notice, but I didn't watch much of that. But yeah, I mean, I'm just taking the piss out of you. That's a British one, right?
Thank you. Well done.
But let's say that, yeah, American, like the whole point of American movies and American television is to export it pretty much. So I feel like there's more people abroad who watch American programming than Americans who watch any programming that's coming from abroad.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's part of the reason why we don't really know many British terms, unless you live there, which would be better. And yeah, unless
you're an Anglophile.
File, yeah.
And because there are quite a lot of Anglophiles in America, the sort of people who like to watch the British TV shows and stuff. But for the most part, yes, most Americans don't really get many British TV.
But I wonder if in those TV shows, like, do you use that much slang? Because, like, for example, I'm thinking like Downton Abbey is like it's, I feel the feeling like it's like half of the time it's like proper English. It's not the street English that you
hear. A lot of the shows that we export, like Downton Abbey and a lot of those period dramas with Keira Knightley in them.
Yeah.
Those films. A lot of those are set around the turn of the previous century, you know, sort of around the, you know, late 19th century and stuff. And of course, you know, in Jane Austen's universe, no, they're
pulling was not very common.
Not, all right, Emma, what are you going to do? I'm going to go out and pull Mr. Darcy, are you? All right, shut up, shut your gob. Like, no, you don't get that at all. No, you're more likely to hear all that sort of thing in just soap operas like EastEnders or Coronation Street or comedy shows that that aren't that popular in the States and stuff. Yeah.
Mm.
So, okay, you're forgiven for not knowing this stuff. That's all right.
Yeah, I didn't mean to like make an excuse for being ignorant, but but yeah, the making out I think would probably be the equivalent. Making out implies kissing and not much more. So like that's probably like
getting off with someone.
Are getting off.
Things like getting off with someone is a bit vague. It could potentially mean more than kissing.
Making out can be, you know, but like if you slept with someone, you wouldn't say I made out with that person. Like right. It implies stuff before the preliminaries, let's say.
Am I right in thinking that in America there are bases, like in baseball? And I've never really understood how many bases there are and what the bases represent. But I hear it in films and TV series, you know, hey, you know, like got to bases, first, yeah. I got to first base. I got to second base with this girl.
Well, you have to understand it's pretty like adolescent. Like we don't like if at 40 years old you're still using the basis of something's wrong. Like it's definitely something like you talk about in high school or whenever you start having a sex life or any sort of thing like that. So bases. So in baseball, do you know how to play baseball? Like baseball is such an American thing. I tried to explain baseball to my French girlfriend and she has no idea what I'm talking about.
I know how to play cricket. So it's like cricket for stupid people, isn't it?
No, we've made it more sophisticated.
Really?
Two bases. We have four. Okay. So there you go. So in baseball, they're four bases. And the idea is you have to hit the ball far enough that gives you like to give you enough time to go around the bases.
Yeah.
And so there's the first base, second base, third base, and then the fourth one we just say it's a home run.
Yeah.
So this is a way we use it as a way of saying how far you've gotten with somebody the night before. So do you want to know the
Yeah, of course I want to know what
I think they're different interpretations. What I learned, first base is kissing. Second base is anything that has to do with chest area.
The girl's chest area, I suppose.
Yes.
Not much interest in a man's chest area.
You never know. Perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah, I suppose.
Third base is everything that's down there.
Mm.
And then a home run is going all the way.
You mean actual
sex.
Penetrative sex.
Sexual intercourse. So, and then there's sloppies.
Sloppies?
Sloppies imply the mount. So sloppy seconds. Like if you get to sloppy second base, so we're in the chest area, but with the mount.
Oh, I see.
Sloppy third.
I can imagine.
Down there with the mount.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
sloppy home base?
Home run. Well, home run's a home run, so.
Yeah, but sloppy, a sloppy home run?
That's getting very anatomically bizarre. Like,
yes.
I'm not sure.
Okay. But we get the idea. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So
thank
that's
you.
Pretty much the system. Yeah.
Thank you finally for decoding it.
Yeah.
Right. Let's move on to some words, to describe people. So what about a plonker?
Oh, that's an idiot, right?
An idiot. Yeah. Yeah. Tosser.
A loser.
Well, it's also an idiot, but it's the meaning of tosser is it's the same as wanker.
Isn't that a loser?
Stupid wanker, stupid tosser. It is a loser, an idiot, yeah. But the specifics of tosser and wanker. I mean, since we're talking about sexual things, a wanker in America. This is probably 1960s or 70s slang, like a jerk off.
Yeah, I don't know. It might be a little bit more like 80s or 90s, but jerk off. Okay, a jerk off, then I guess, so it's a loser, but like is there like when you say a wanker, it's kind of like, is the person mean, or it doesn't really specify if the person is mean? It's like someone who's not intelligent, but also I thought there was like this loser aspect, like he's
right.
I'll let you define.
Let me be clear. Okay, let me be clear. So the difference between wanker and tosser. So basically, first of all, the literal meaning of both those words is someone who masturbates.
Yeah.
That's why I said jerk off, because I think that is the same in America, right? It's that a jerk or jerk off is someone who masturbates too. Right. Anyway, but we use the word as an insult. Whether the person masturbates or not, obviously.
Yeah.
So a wanker is a stronger word than tosser. It's ruder than tosser. Tosser is quite a funny little word. Tosser. It's quite a funny one. No. But wanker is quite an offensive word. And it also, if someone's a wanker, it means they're a mean person, not nice person.
Oh, okay.
Like
is that what happens when you masturbate too much?
See, there's no connection at all between the actual sexual act and the meaning of this particular
I would think
word.
The contrary, that you'd be very laid back.
Yeah, you'd be like, yeah, that's fine, yeah, go ahead.
Sir.
I'm a bit busy, you go ahead, I'm dealing with something here, you go
I'm
on.
Taking care of something else.
Yeah, but no, a wanker, he's a fucking wanker, that guy. Like, for example, the security guard at the shop always stops me and gives me a hard time. For no reason, he's a fucking wanker. So
I thought wanker was more like was more like a loser, like he's a stupid, like lack of importance of the person. I didn't know that there was like the mean aspect.
No,
play with a wanker.
I would say a wanker is a mean person. I mean, just to
then the equivalent in America would be like an asshole. That would probably be the most common vulgar way of calling somebody mean. Is an asshole.
Yeah. I mean, I've just checked it out in the Oxford Learner's Dictionary, and they say wanker is British English taboo slang, an offensive word used to refer to a man that you dislike or you are angry with.
For whatever reason.
So just anyone you're angry with, you fucking wanker. Like someone, you're driving and someone cuts you up while you're driving. And you lean, roll down the window. Oi, fucking wanker! Right, hold on. Let me see what Cambridge say, because, Oxford and Cambridge. Wanker, noun, UK, offensive. First definition, a very stupid or unpleasant person, usually a man. So there is that aspect of someone being stupid, but unpleasant. Someone who's not nice.
Unpleasant,
And second definition, a person who masturbates.
I like how that's become the second definition.
Yes, that's right. Okay.
Well, I have a question. Like, would a British person call somebody an asshole? Or is that like an American?
No, we wouldn't say asshole. We'd say arsehole. You arsehole.
Asshole, yeah.
He's a proper arsehole, that guy.
Yeah.
Arsehole. So, arse, basically, in most cases, in most cases, when you say ass in America, we would
like,
say
asshole. And he goes, arse. It sounds like it sounds too classy for asshole.
Well, it depends. Again, this is sort of that thing that I was trying to get at earlier when people thought that we were Australian, because what I was trying to say was that Americans sometimes expect British, all British things to be like Downton Abbey, that they, you expect us all to be these, pass the tea, would you like some more sugar, you know, lovely tea, darling. Oh, you know, I really don't like the vicar. He really is an arsehole. No, we don't all speak like that. In fact, most people speak with some sort of regional accent. So it'd be like, you know, if you're from London, he's an arsehole, that guy. You fucking arsehole, right? Arsehole, right? If you're a Cockney, it's like, oi, give me them keys, you arsehole. Right, come on then, you fucking arsehole. You know, so that doesn't sound too posh and proper, does it?
No.
And if you're from Liverpool, all right, mate, yeah, he's a proper arsehole, that guy. He's a, oi, you massive arsehole. Oh, I don't know. I'm not doing a very good job of the Liverpool version there. Anyway, so no, it's not.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, I suppose so. Let's see. Okay, let's just move on a little bit more. This is because we're doing slang, it all starts to get rude and if offensive.
Of course.
Yeah. I'm going to try and find some that aren't that rude and offensive, although I've got to do this one. I've got to do this one. Right. A fag. I'm just having a fag. Or,
excuse me,
could you give me a fag? Yeah, cigarette.
Not to be confused with the American version of this same word.
Which is a very, very, very offensive word in America these days. A fag, or short for a faggot, which means a gay person, but it's a very, very derogatory word for a homosexual.
And that's one of those like mix-up things you should never say that in America. Don't ask anybody. Don't just even the word fag is just not correct at all.
Avoid the word fag at all costs in America unless you want to be an asshole.
Yes, if you want to be a wanker.
Exactly, then you can use it, but otherwise avoid it at all costs.
Everyone, so it's a cigarette.
Just forget about that word completely. Cigarette, just say cigarette, even in
cigarette,
England.
Yeah.
Even in England, just say cigarette. Let's see. A wind-up. A wind-up. Are you winding me up?
Getting me mad. Somebody who's an instigator.
Well, how about this? He's a wind-up merchant. Don't be such a wind-up merchant. So wind-up in this case. So we do have wind-up meaning this is really winding me up. Like I'm trying to install a...
Getting me mad.
Yeah, I'm trying to install the software update on my phone and it's just not working because it says my phone doesn't have enough data in it. And it's just like every time I do it, it fails. So it's really starting to wind me up now. That is making me mad or making me annoyed. But if you're such a wind-up merchant, stop winding me up. Are you winding me up? It means, are you teasing me? Are you making fun of me?
Okay.
Teasing. You know,
I didn't know that, yeah.
Like, you know, someone who's like playing tricks on people and stuff, a wind-up merchant. Okay, all right, I'm going to find something else.
I guess the equivalent for winding me up, like if in the first example, would be like pissing me off, kind of, in American English. It might be lighter than pissing me off.
No. Well, yeah, in the sense of like, yeah, installing the software update on my phone is really pissing me off. Yes. It's really winding me up. It's similar thing, yeah, definitely. Yeah. But then you can also say to wind someone up, or this is a wind up, means this is a joke. This is like someone's playing a trick on me. This is some kind of big joke.
Okay, can it be like a con, like an intentional, prank or
yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Like someone is deceiving you, and doing it for a joke, yeah. This is a wind-up, yeah. Okay. All you need to do is watch a Guy Ritchie film. You know, Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels.
Great, great movie.
Or Snatch. And I'm sure that's in it. Is this a fucking wind-up? Are you winding me up? Something like that. I'm sure it's in there.
Yeah.
Lots of F-bombs here. Sorry about that. If any swearing intolerant people are listening to this, I do apologize profusely.
But he says it with such a great, nice British accent, so it's fine.
What a bewildering mix of sincere apologizing combined with fucking assholes. Oh, I'm terribly sorry. Terribly sorry, everybody. Well, let's see what else. Whinging.
Don't know.
Whinging. Oh, you know, are you whinging it? Can you stop whinging? We're nearly there. All right, stop whinging.
To whine?
Whine, yes, which means?
To complain?
Yes. Whinging. You're always whinging on. You're such a whinger. Means you're someone who's always moaning, whining, complaining. Are we nearly there? I don't want to do the thing. I'll stop whinging. Yeah.
Don't know. I did not know that.
Okay. We've got, I'm going to do three more. No, four more. Right. Smart.
Means neat. Like tidy.
Yes. Specifically referring to?
Clothing.
Yes.
How you're dressed.
Yes.
Right? Like dressed well. Well dressed.
You're looking very smart today. What's the big...
Elegant.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's like a mix of elegant, but also... Like you can be smart, dressed smartly, but not necessarily elegantly.
You don't need the elegant part. It's just someone who's very well dressed. So if you've got an important job interview, you'd need to dress smart.
Yeah.
You'd need to wear some smart clothes.
So be kind of like...
formal.
I don't know what... Yeah, I guess formal. Yeah.
Yeah. Instead, rather than casual.
Yeah.
And we actually have a category of clothing which is smart casual.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have that in the States?
No.
Okay, which is sort of like...
Smart for us is intelligent.
Yeah, exactly.
We rarely use smart in the sense of like well-dressed.
Like, gee, you're real smart, huh?
No.
Like, wow, you're really, really intelligent, aren't you?
Yeah.
Gee, you're kind of smart. Like, gosh, you are rather intelligent, aren't you?
By definition, the fact that you're saying, gee, you're smart, huh? Means you are not smart.
So in England, in British English, then smart means well-dressed. And in American English, smart is intelligent. Okay.
Yes. Oh, smart also means intelligent for you guys, right? Or not at all?
Smart also means intelligent. Only when we, you know, use the American thing.
Okay.
So if I said that in my family back home in front of my parents, like, oh, wow, you know, if I'm talking about my daughter, oh, she seems, you know, she's quite smart, then my parents would be like, you used an American. We don't have American English in this house.
We're intelligent here. We're not smart.
I'm joking a little bit, but they actually don't like it. They genuinely don't like it if I say smart, meaning intelligent. They're like, no. Yes, clean, tidy, stylish appearance. Exactly. Okay, what about this one? Oh, that's lush. Oh, we had a...
That's
lush, that is.
I know this one. I know this one. Does it mean like, I'm trying to think of the way to say it. Extravagant?
No, not particularly. No, not exactly. So like, she's lush, isn't she? Or... Oh, where did you get those trainers? They are lush.
Huh, would it be like hip?
It just means good. It just means good. And if it's for a person, it means attractive.
Okay.
So, but otherwise, it's just really great. Like, oh, those shoes, your new trainers in British English, sneakers in American English.
Yeah.
Those trainers are lush, meaning they're really nice.
Awesome. Yeah. We would say awesome.
Yeah. Looks good, basically. Good looking, okay. I would say. But also you can say things like, oh, we had a lush time on holiday.
Okay.
We had a lush time on my birthday. Also means really good. So it's really good or really attractive.
Okay.
Hmm. And if you ever, there's a TV show, which I don't know if you've ever heard of. It's called Gavin and Stacey.
I've heard of it.
It's great. It's really good. And it's like basically a couple. Gavin and Stacey are the couple. Gavin is from Essex, which is just to the east of London. And Stacey is from Barry Island, which is Wales, South Wales. And she's got her and her entire family have got really strong Welsh accents. They're wonderful. And everything's lush. Absolutely everything's lush. I can't do the accent. If I start doing Welsh, it starts to come out like that, sort of like a Southwest sort of thing. Anyway, I can't really do Welsh, but
and like what, the Welsh use lush more often than the Londoners.
It's lush, yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah,
definitely, certainly in that part of Wales. Like I think where Barry Island, Southwest Wales, Barry Island. Hold on a minute. It's right at the southern point of southernmost part of Wales, so Cardiff, Cardiff basically. Yeah, so not that far from like the southwest of England. Anyway, Sebastian, two more things. Grotty. Oh, I'm feeling a bit grotty today.
In a bad mood.
No, it means you feel physically not very good.
Oh, okay.
You feel feeling under
like
the
weather.
Yeah.
Under the weather.
Like, I don't know, just like maybe I had too much to drink last night. I'm feeling a bit grotty. Or I smoked a cigarette earlier, a terrible idea. And now I feel dead grotty now.
It's a good word because it sounds like what it's supposed to say, what it means.
Yeah. I find myself using it a lot when I'm walking the streets of Paris with my daughter. And I'm like, no, don't go over there. It's all grotty over there.
So it's kind of like sketchy.
Well, so I used it then before, right? It's saying you feel grotty. If you feel grotty, it feels you feel sort of a bit disgusting or something. Like you feel a bit unwell. Feel a bit grotty, like exactly like you would feel if you smoked a cigarette for no reason.
Yeah.
You know, like if you don't smoke and then you smoke a cigarette, feel so grotty. But also you use it to just mean dirty and unclean. So as you'll know, having lived in Paris, lots of grotty places, like doorways, steps, places where people urinate on the street. Ugh.
At best.
That's right, listeners. I know that many people have got this view of Paris, which is that it's like that film Amelie. And it's all flowers and Montmartre and croissants. And
there is that part that does exist.
Yeah, definitely. But there's also grotty corners where some drunk guy did a pee and maybe something else.
Or where Amelie went to pee. We don't know. What she does when the camera's not rolling.
When she's drunk and grotty on Friday night. Okay, and then finally, tar.
Tar, T-A-R.
T-A.
T-A-R.
T-A-R. So, for example, if I say, can you pass me the sugar? And you go, there you go. And I'd say, tar.
Thanks.
Yep.
Is it just like, is it coming from the word thanks?
I guess so. Yeah, it must be a short version of thanks. But, I mean, again, it's not something that people really think about. We don't really ever have to question where it comes from. Everyone just knows ta means thanks, and it's
can you be that lazy that you had to cut thanks down to ta?
It's not ta, it's ta, ta,
ta, ta,
ta,
ta,
ta, ta. Yeah. Even very masculine blokes would say tar.
Tar.
There you go, mate. Tar. See you later. Yeah. So it's not even like a, you know, a little dainty feminine like, sort of expression.
Yeah. Ta.
No, it's like, all right, ta, cheers, nice one, see you later, mate. All right, cheers, ta, see you later.
I like cheers. You know, we don't have cheers. Cheers is like thanks. Mm-hmm. But it's also like, can also be like goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, that's correct.
It seems like one of those words that can be lots of things. It's like a nice word. We know it's all like, in all its senses, are it's nice, it's polite, but it's not really clear what cheers is. It's like kind of thanks, kind of bye.
Yeah, okay. So basically three things. It's thanks. So you give me something and I go, all right, cheers, mate.
Yeah.
Thanks. Or like, you know, cheers. Thanks for being on the podcast. All right, cheers. Meaning thank you. And also cheers can mean goodbye. It's like, all right, mate, yeah, see you later. Okay, cheers, bye, see you later. Cheers. Yeah. And we often write it at the end of informal emails. Yeah. You know, so I'll catch up with you later. All right, then, cheers, Luke.
But I think it's also, like, as you just said, it's like you're welcome, too. Like, if I were to give you a beer, you'd say thank you, and I'd say cheers.
No, it's not you're welcome. It's just thanks. So it's like you give me the beer and I'd say cheers, meaning thanks. And then we lift our glasses and we say cheers when we actually clink the glasses together. That's the third thing.
That's the only way we use it in America. Cheers is when you're toasting something.
Having a drink.
With a drink. But I thought cheers would be like, if I give you something, whether it be, let's say, get out of alcohol, let's say coffee. I give you a coffee. You say cheers. Oh, no, sorry. You say thanks. I thought I could say cheers kind of like... kind of like a way to say a mix between you're welcome and don't mention it.
No, not really. Just thanks. So it's the three things. Thanks, yeah. Like
kind of goodbye.
And it's sort of like goodbye. And also it's when you take a drink with someone. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Okay. Shall I just do one more just to kind of finish that? So, a chin wag. We've had a good chin wag.
Conversation.
Yes.
Is that right?
Conversation, exactly. And you worked
because
it out.
When you talk a lot, your chin wags.
Your chin goes up and down. Okay. Having a chin wag, your chin wags up and down. Exactly. Okay, so there you go. That's it.
Yeah, lots I didn't know. It's really rich.
I don't know how many you got right. I wasn't counting. Maybe I need to go back through this and count and get a score.
I did not get 50%.
You think you got less than 50%?
I also think that you were looking through the words and you skipped ones that would have been too easy.
Yeah, I mean, some of the other ones. I mean, also, I skipped ones that were just a bit sort of stupid, ones I don't really use.
Okay.
I've got some other ones. Like, it's all gone pear-shaped. It's a great expression. I should have put that one in.
What, down the drain?
It's all gone down It's all gone down the drain means it's done. It's
gone badly.
It's gone bad and you can't recover it.
Yeah.
But it's gone pear-shaped means it's just gone wrong.
Okay.
So imagine what used to be a circle has now become pear-shaped.
Pear-shaped.
It's somehow, it's kind of gone wrong somehow. It's all gone pear-shaped. So if you're out on a night out, you've gone out on the lash, maybe you've gone out on the pool, and you're out with your friends and you're having your drinks and stuff and you're on the town going to different places and then, you know...
You're chin wagging a bit.
Having a good chin wag with your mates. And, you know, you have too many drinks. One thing leads to another and it's all gone pear-shaped. You've lost half your friends. One guy's sick.
Your wallet.
Someone's taken your wallet and it's just an average Friday night at 2 a.m. on your average English high street where people are... passed out on the street, the police are there, there are ambulances, and some guys are having a fight over there, and it's just like some kind of medieval scene. It's all gone pear-shaped. It's all gone wrong. But it's not just for that. It could be anything like, I don't know, what else could go pear-shaped? Just any plans that kind of go wrong. Like if you've got...
Like if we were having technical issues with this podcast.
Yeah, perfect.
It's working.
Yeah, if the microphones aren't working and people keep dropping out of the live stream and it's like, oh, God, it's all gone pear-shaped. So there you go. Well, and so there are others. I'll link the article for the listeners onto the page for the episode so that they can check the whole thing out and see all 50 of these things. I've done episodes about slang before. I'll mention that as I do some sort of outro for this episode. But Sebastian, thank you very much for being back on the podcast.
Oh, thank you.
Cheers.
We can do perhaps one with American slang. I don't know if that would interest you.
Yeah, certainly.
But
yeah,
there's a whole slew of American words that are probably not used in England. Probably you guys know them, but I don't think you guys really use them. And another thing, which is not really English, but Yiddish. There's so many Yiddish words. I'm Jewish and I'm coming from the New York Jewish culture.
Yeah.
And there's lots of Yiddish words that we use that have pretty much become English words, like we've used them so much. And that could be, I don't know if that's kind of
That'd be great.
Going, it's too far outside the
not
the
at all. I think actually English, that but. There are probably a few Yiddish words that I use in my life. So, yeah. I mean, we'll mention them now. We're near the end of the episode, but we can do this again if we do this thing about American slang, which I think is a great idea. So I do say the word schlep. I've been schlepping this bag around town all day. Is that from
very
Yiddish?
Common. It's definitely Yiddish, yeah.
Schlepping meaning carrying something kind of big or heavy.
Heavy, yeah.
And also that thing of like, I don't know, what would it be like? I don't know. I've just got to try and think of a good example of this. So if I keep going on about the Beatles all the time, because I'm a huge fan, and the other person I'm talking to is not interested, they're like, oh, Beatles schmeetles. Is that Yiddish?
I don't think that's Yiddish.
It sounded like it to me. I thought
because we have a sh sound, but I don't think that originally comes from, no. Because you could use that for anything. I think you'd be like, oh, podcast, schmodcast. Like,
good name for a podcast.
Yeah, so no, I don't think there is any Yiddish roots in that.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll let you explore that further. I'm just trying to think.
Yeah, but if you want to do an American slang, then we could branch out into some more specific slang, like Yiddish slang.
I'd love to do that.
I think Yiddish has gotten into so prevalent in American English, partly because people in New York use it a lot, and you know, lots of shows are written in New York and, you know, filmed in New York, and so naturally it kind of just gets exported to the rest of the country and probably abroad, like you say, schlep. I mean, it's also because they're perfect words.
Yeah.
Just like in any language, sometimes there's a very good word that implies, that has a very specific meaning that, you know, you can't really find another word that means exactly that thing. Schlep is the idea of carrying something heavy and you're suffering because of it.
Yeah, and you're like, let's say you've picked up a box from the post office for your wife and you realize that you've got to make a trip and you've got to carry this box across town. So you're schlepping the box around all day.
And you could also say it's a schlep. Like if you were like, oh, come over for my podcast, come over to my place, and you know, I live across town, and be, oh, it's a schlep, meaning it's far and it's annoying to get there. You can say it's a schlep.
It's a real schlep. Like
it's a real schlep.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, definitely. Let's do one about American slang anytime. That would be good.
Yeah.
But in any case, enjoy the countryside. I don't know which part of the countryside you're in, but enjoy it.
The Loire Atlantique.
Oh, that's nice.
It's where Nantes, like not too far from Nantes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like Brittany, it's southern Brittany.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Lovely. Okay. Well, yeah. Enjoy it over there. And
thank you.
And see you when all this craziness is over. Hopefully see you properly soon in some format.
Yeah. Yeah, in physical.
In actual physical, normal life.
Presence, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Bedtime.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
Thank you very much.
For you. Yeah. Cheers, mate.
Yeah, of course. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You can already see that chill in the glass out. That's a good thing. You got perfect eyes.
You got perfect eyes
and a really cold glass.
And a really cold glass.
Till then, I'll be somewhere getting bent up in a dead sipping gin.
Righty-ho then, that was Sebastian Marx. Thank you, Sebastian. And 18 bits of English slang. Maybe more than 18. Certainly loads of stuff. Anyway, officially 18 bits of English, British English slang. So how many things did he get right? How many things did he know? At the beginning, he predicted that he would get 50% correct, I think. Well, out of 18 items, he identified 7. And my criteria for getting it right was whether he knew the word or phrase already, or if he worked it out correctly, first guess from my example. So, based on that criteria, he got 7 out of 18. What's that as a percentage? Do you know? 7 out of 18 as a percentage. Some of the mathematicians out there listening are already on it. You've probably beep, 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 beep. That's your brain working it out. You've 7 out of 18 as a percentage. Hold on a minute, Luke. Yeah, got it. Some of you have already worked it out, but I personally need a calculator to work that one out. I should probably use a calculator, unless you want to listen to me working that out in my head. But trust me, you don't want to listen to that. It would be mostly silence and me going, well, I think 7... You don't want to listen to that. I don't think I can do it. Anyway, the result is 38.8888888889. I don't know why there's like a random 9 at the end. It's not random, Luke, it's maths. I don't know why there's a 9 at the end of that number. 38.8888888889. Basically, let's round that up to 39%. Which is a clear fail, I think everyone can agree. Sorry, Sebastian, but he knew. It's all right. I mean, you know, what happens? Oh, you didn't know that English slang. Never mind. Carry on with your life. It's fine. Anyway, what does this mean? I'm not sure, except that it proves something about American and British culture and language. Sebastian made the point during the episode, and I think I've said it before previously, like in that slang game I did with Jennifer from English Across the Pond last year in an episode. You remember that? It was called the UK versus USA slang game or something. We did a similar thing. So the point is that basically British people are way more familiar with American English than Americans. And of course, I mean people from the USA, Americans. Brits are more familiar with American English than Americans are with British English, because we're exposed to a lot more American culture through TV and film than Americans are exposed to British culture. Why do you keep saying Americans like that? It's just the sort of, it's a kind of old-fashioned BBC sort of pronunciation, America. I don't know. Listen to the episode called The Day to Day to find out more about America. Like that. Anyway, America produces, and North America, the United States of America, sorry to all those other people who live in the continent of America who get sort of bent out of shape when they hear people say America and they mean United States of America. Sorry, everyone. The world apologizes for that. It's just the way it is. I'm sorry. We've just all come to say America meaning the United States. The United States produces tons of TV and film, of course, and exports a massive amount too. So they make loads of TV and film and they export loads of it too. But it doesn't import as much TV and film as it exports. Basically, most Americans don't get exposed to that much British English. Certainly not the kind of informal slang, local stuff that we touched on in this episode. Big surprise. Not really. We knew this about the USA. Big place, quite loud on the world stage, exports a lot of stuff, a lot of culture, but to a large extent doesn't really look beyond its own borders all that much, relatively speaking. I mean, I say that, but I know for a fact there are plenty of American people who are very international in their mindset, and, you know, I don't mean to generalize. But there you go. Anyway, never mind all that geopolitical stuff and also generalising about all Americans are like this, aren't they? I can't stand that, really. I just enjoyed chatting with Sebastian in this episode and sharing some of my version of English with him. That is more interesting and fun for me than sort of saying, Americans don't know, you know, whatever. What about you? How much of the slang in this episode did you know? I've definitely talked about some of those things before, but I bet there were one or two new things in there too. But how much of it did you know, and how much did you learn from me in previous episodes? And if you didn't get it from me, where have you learnt British slang? Let me know in the comments section. Where'd you get your slang from? Also, feel free to add other bits of British slang that you think is especially quintessentially British in the comments section. All the slang that I tested Sebastian on is listed on the page for this episode on the website, so check it out. That's where you can see specific spellings of words and phrases, and you can also check out some example sentences and definitions that I've given for you there. Thank you, Luke. You're welcome. Talking of British English expressions, I must finish that series that I started last autumn, which was called 88 English Expressions That Will Confuse Everyone. Remember that? I did parts 1 and 2. I still have part 3. I still have about 25-ish expressions left to cover, I think, so I must get round to doing that. Sometimes that happens. I kind of, I don't know, I have one other episode that I need to do, or I say, I'm going to do this episode. I kind of promise it. And then it doesn't happen because my podcast is a bit like a big, slow-moving ship, okay? Imagine, like a big, slow-moving ship. Sometimes I miss something or I forget something and kind of sail past it. But for some reason, it's very hard to stop the ship or turn it round and go back. So if I don't do a specific episode I was planning to do at one point, general momentum just keeps pushing me forwards and it's difficult to turn the ship around and go back and kind of, you know, go back and do whatever it is that I should have done. So I'm not sure why this is, but there it is. Now, there's some stuff to mention at the end here. We're nearly finished, but I've just got some things to ramble on about at the end. Some stuff to mention. First of all, I just want to say thank you for lovely, lovely, lovely comments from lovely, lovely listeners on the last episode of the podcast. That was episode 664 with my wife, Mrs. Thompson, the wife. Lovely, lovely comments from lovely, lovely Lepsters. Thank you. Comments came in different locations like YouTube, on the website, Twitter, by email. Many people said very nice things. Lots of people also said, you weren't speaking too quickly, Luke. I don't know. I was concerned. I was thinking, oh no, I'm really talking too fast. And I was also concerned that I was cutting my wife off. But everything's fine, isn't it? It's all okay. But anyway, thank you very much for nice comments and for saying nice things. I'm glad that you enjoyed listening to that episode. All right, that's good. And my wife, I showed her the comments and she said that the comments were cute and lovely. So thank you very much. Lovely, lovely, lovely. Nice, 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 nice. Good. What else? Well, Something Evil This Way Comes. Episode. What's the next episode of this podcast? That's right. It's episode 666. Episode 666 is next. 666, often described as the number of the beast, the mark of the devil. Lots of people have been asking if I'm planning anything special for episode 666. Now, I don't believe in all of that stuff. Don't believe in all that kind of, you know, devil-y type stuff. I'm not really superstitious. But anyway, lots of people have been asking if I'm planning anything special for that. Well, you will just have to wait and see. Okay, so I'm just going to leave you with that. But episode 666 is due to be next, and we'll see what comes in that one. Okay, but until then, I shall bid you farewell, and I hope that you stay well and healthy and fit and happy and all those things. And end the episode, Luke. Okay. Thank you for listening to this. Speak to you in the next one. For now, it's time to say goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.